Welcome back to Stories from the Ashes, where we pontificate on good books and the stories that define and refine us. I'm your host, Amber, and I am here today with Charlessa and our special guest, Kelly Curtis. Kelly is someone who I found on Facebook when one of our members shared a post of Kelly's into our community group, and it was beautiful. Kelly had read a whole bunch of books last year and done alternative cover illustrations for each and every one of them, and all of those covers can be seen in the show notes, and I highly recommend that you go and look at them. They're beautiful and creative and so unique, and I want to share with you what Kelly had shared on her post that really, I just loved it. She said, "It all started with Miss Prim. For many years, I was convinced of a tragic lie that novels were lesser things than nonfiction. In my youth, a novel was a school assignment to trudge through because some conclave of intellectuals blessed it with merit. At best, the story within would relate to some real thing of interest. This conviction became less of one over time, and it completely changed in January when the ancient widow character in The Awakening of Miss Prim shook my depths. From there, I began novel reading for pleasure, to soften all the hardness, to elevate the soul. I am not a speedy reader, but I managed 13 novels this year. I painted a little painting for each book, which I happily display here. And Kelly is so gracious to come and talk to us about her reading journey from nonfiction into fiction." So Kelly, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're so excited to talk to you. So all of your pretty book covers, first of all, I'd love to talk about your art. Have you always had an artistic bent?
Yes, I started out adult life as an art student, and that transitioned over time to computer science. I don't know how that happened, but that's the way it was. And it's just in the last few years, I've been returning to art and reading and stuff like that and humanities.
Yeah, that's very cool. So you shared in your post that you did not read much fiction before last year. Is that how you would put it?
Yeah. So like sporadically throughout my life, I've read fiction here or there. And especially when I think my, I guess, discrimination towards not reading fiction started out in school because of the way they presented it is like, here's the assignment. And you could tell like it was packaged in a way where like you had to get through it in like a few weeks and you had to like understand the book the way whoever was teaching you wanted you to understand it. And I sort of, I thought of them as textbooks. So I just kind of ignored them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting because you asked me in a message if I enjoyed history. And that's basically exactly what I told you was I started to enjoy reading history as an adult because it was so dry in its presentation as a kid. So I understand how fiction, if you are just reading it to the test or to what you're going to have to be told to pull out of it, that could be pretty soul-sucking. So what changed for you last year? What pushed you to start reading at the volume that you did of fiction?
I don't know if there was like one particular catalyst or if it even began last year. It definitely went into superdrive last year. I started reading, like by choice, C.S. Lewis. I read, this was a few years ago, this is Great Divorce and the Screwtape Letters, because first of all, because they're short. And also they're very good. And I'm a slow reader and you can get through those books in like a day if you try. So, and then I guess I'm not sure I think it was just an Amazon search or something like that. And I found The Awakening of Miss Prim. And that book is about a lot of things, but it's about books. So, and they name a lot of books and I was like, I really enjoy this story, but I bet you I'd enjoy it more if I understood like these books that she's referencing or talking about or she's cataloging. Yeah. There's just one of my favorite scenes where they're having essentially a theological argument and she's holding the Venerable Bede in her arms. And I'm like, I know that book. I know that guy. I know medieval history. But then later on, they're talking about Austen and Little Women. And I was like, I don't really know those books. But this must inform the story somehow. So I think a lot of my picks for last year were based on that.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I now that you say that, I do recognize a lot of the titles that you illustrated covers for is coming from Miss Prim. And I don't know if I told you this, but Miss Prim was my book back. And so I was a voracious reader as a child. And then I got married and had my first kid the week before our first wedding anniversary and just flew into being a mom, being a wife. And I had a chronic illness that showed up right after her birth. And so then we started having more babies. Like every 3 years we had a kid and they had autism. And so just trying to figure life out, and that chronic illness was debilitating for the first 9 years. And so I had like epic mom brain, just could not think. My brain was cotton. And then about when Everhart was one, so about, it was right after he was born. So about 6 years, like 7 years ago, I started a supplement that gave me my life back. Like it took my pain away. So I no longer was disassociating all day because of my pain levels. Like it took it down to a manageable level and I could think again. And I happened to have joined a Facebook group for readers, and a lot of people were reading Miss Prim. And I was like, sure, why not? Like, I'll just read that. And it just, it like broke open this shell around my heart. And I was just like, I love reading. Why am I not? Like every year I would buy myself one book for Christmas during all of this fog, but it was like thrillers and mysteries, just something that would go fast that I would read in an evening and be done with it. Cause that's all I had the space for, but I had space again. And Miss Prim just reminded me of all those books that I had loved as a kid and as a teen. And I dove in. Like it was, I jumped into the ocean and I was back and swimming and happy in my fiction. And that's also when I started reading nonfiction for the first time and enjoying it, other than like self-help books. I don't think I'd read much nonfiction, but I really started loving biographies so much.
Yeah, it's amazing how it kind of did that. It took, in my case, it took these books that I knew about and it made them like relevant to, first of all, relevant to things I was already interested in. And I've been reading apologetics and theology and stuff like that and sort of like reorienting these novels towards that. And that was like, oh, these are interesting in a different way. I can read these books in a different way. I can read about Mr. Darcy thinking something higher, right? So I thought that that was kind of the selling point for me. And so I've really enjoyed it. There's things in these books that I read on these lists that if I had read them a previous time in my life, I probably wouldn't have gotten out of it.
Yes. I was having a conversation with someone on Facebook today about the fact that we're both reading through the same series and they got to a certain book and they did not enjoy it at all. They thought it was the worst book this author had ever written and they think they might be done with the series. And I was like, that's my favorite book from the series so far. I loved it. And these are the reasons that I loved it. And then I mentioned that I think it's so incredible how people carry their own experiences and season of life into a book. And that makes the book completely living in that it is a different read for every person. Because my almost 16-year-old, 16 next week, I cannot even. My almost 16-year-old was reading Amazon reviews over my shoulder. Because after this woman said that, I went to see what the 1- and 2-star Amazon reviews were. Because I've known that some people have not enjoyed it as much as me. And she's reading and she's like, what are they talking about? Did they read the same book that we read? And I was like, yeah, no, they read it with different life experience. They read it with different things that are already on their hearts right now. And so they did read a different book than we did. So that's just such an interesting thing. It would be so interesting to me to meet Darcy now, having not met him at 8. Like that would just be a totally different experience.
I didn't actually read Little Women like as a kid, like most people probably do. I saw the Winona Ryder film when I was a kid. And so I remember most people identifying with Jo the most. And she was a certain type of character to me. And then reading the novel last year, I was like, this is interesting, you know, revisiting the childhood of these girls. But I think the second half of the book where she has her, I don't know, coming of age moment where she's deciding whether or not writing this pulpy junk
dime novel
writing is Yes, Dime Novels is really good for her soul. And then she meets Mr. Bear, who kind of, I don't know, leads her, reorients her back where she needs to be. And that sort of thing, I think that's not really in the film, but that's something I would have totally missed, that whole situation between them. I remember when I was a kid, I was like, why didn't she marry Laurie? I didn't understand that. But as an adult, and like, I see it totally differently. I see her totally differently.
Charlissa, have you read Little Women yet?
I have once, but it's on my list to go back to because the same thing. I think because of when I read it, I didn't catch those little tidbits that everybody else caught or are highlights in their life now.
Yeah.
You know, where you can see yourself in that role or you can see yourself playing that yourself. And I think that's what fiction does when we start to, it reorientates us, it lines us up. It might allow us to see things different than we would have seen it before. You know, nonfiction does that because of course it's all truth or whatever, but like we can bring our own experiences and glasses into fiction. And I think that's where we all got off when we spent the time doing nonfiction, is we just got off of being real and allowing life to speak to us and write our stories. And I think that's where we get off when we spend all this time with nonfiction. But yeah.
Yeah. I think that talking about Little Women, that just makes me think of how much I love books that have a full cast in age ranges, because I think those books just invite you back at a different point in your life. Like when I read Anne of Green Gables to my girls a couple years ago, like for the first time, I really got Marilla and understood where Marilla was coming from and what her struggles with Anne would have been now that I'm actually a mom of teenage daughters. And I missed all of that when I was younger. And so I think that different books like Little Women and Anne of Green Gables and all the Austen books, and then more recently Echo Mountain, they just have really good casts at different stages in life where you want to come back when you reach that new stage, because you're like, I really want to look at this through a different lens and feel and experience a story from their shoes.
Well, and I'll add to that, I read a lot of young fiction with the idea that as I go into it thinking I'm going to bed him for my daughter. And I don't really do that. It's not really for that. It's just to offer a suggestion. But the other side is I'm viewing possibly situations the way she might view them, because it's written with a teenager point of view that I'm like, oh, that might have bothered her. Or, oh, I get this now of why that is being said or done, because I'm viewing it possibly from a point of view of a 12-year-old or, you know, a preteen that I wouldn't have got if I would have read it as a preteen. And so there's always those pivotal moments when you take your time to see it from somebody else's point of view, either where you're at or somebody else's point of view. So, so Kelly, how did you come about like deciding to start to draw what you were portraying in the stories? Because Miss Prim's your first one. So what made you sit down and start drawing and illustrating them?
I'm not sure. I just kind of, sometimes it was, I wanted to express something out of the experience I had. Sometimes I had actual like imagery. I think I had specific imagery for Little Women that's a little different from, I think, what people would expect. It's got like air balloons in the sky and people flying everywhere. And then, or just scenes or parts of it that resonated with me. There is, I think, the Miss Prim one. I had the tulips, the step tulips, and the wing chair and the pineapple and the bead book. Either like, I guess, alternative cover or stuff that I wanted to express that I got.
They're beautifully done. So, just, they're like great.
They are so pretty.
I hadn't, along with reading, like I said at the beginning, I hadn't done a whole lot of art. I've never stopped doing art, but I haven't done it sort of frequently as I have been in the last couple of
years. I
think
it's true. Once we like read something, sometimes we want to express what we read, or we want to like be it worth what we our time of doing it. And so you having something to show that you read it and probably couldn't really discuss it, you know. My husband would not be like keen on discussing Miss Prim with me. So you needed to express it somehow. And I think that's important too. So
yeah. There are some parts where I would talk about the book with my husband, and like he would find it interesting. He thought the painting I did for Little Women was based on the description I gave him. He liked it. But there's other stuff like Jane Austen novels. I don't think he helped me for the Jane Austen one. I just did a sailing ship kind of sailing away, And he's a big naval nerd. And I said, are all these sails and masts correct? Like for the Regency period? He was like, yes. So that's the input I got from him.
That's beautiful. That's good. I will say that I have found for a lot of men that the movies are the intro to them being interested in reading the books. And so if he's into the Navy and all that, he might enjoy watching Persuasion, and then he might be willing to read the rest of the story.
He watched, there was a recent adaptation of Far From the Madding Crowd that he watched with me. And it wasn't perfect. The book was better. But it wasn't terribly off the path. And he likes naval and military history and stuff like that. And so he sort of informed me a bit more about Sergeant Troy, who's like the foil to Gabriel Oak, about how he seems like he's in a higher ranking position to her, but he's not, and all this other stuff. So he's helpful in the historical aspect too.
Yeah, that's great to have somebody who will have those conversations with you, especially with your previous enjoyment of nonfiction.
Yes, yes.
You're like pulling those parts out. So what were your favorite titles? Like, did any of them really surprise you because they ended up not being at all about what you thought they were going to be about? I've had that experience before.
Well, I think, like, we went over Miss Prim, and it was, I didn't know what to expect, and I loved what I got. And the thing that I think, maybe I wrote about this in my Facebook post, but there was there's a scene near the end where she's sitting, Miss Prim is having tea with this ancient widow, and she survived like four or five husbands. And she basically like starts telling her that you're hard, that's your problem. I'm an old lady, I've been through all this stuff. I deserve to be the way that I am, but you just won't take risks, you won't let yourself, you won't soften yourself up, you won't experience life. And like, as I'm reading this, I'm just hearing, I don't know, like some primordial voice of some lady just telling me to, like, I don't know, this giving me instructions for life. And I was like, that's, it was really moving with that one. And then I went over with Little Women. Joe surprised me reading it now. And then I read a book by Elizabeth Gouge. I'm not sure how popular she is or not, but I read The Scent of Water. And that book is about a woman, I think it's post-World War II or something like that. She inherits a cottage in a small town from a cousin or a relative that's deceased. And there's a few side stories going on with the different townspeople and herself. But a lot of it is kind of discovering who her deceased cousin was. And it turns out that she had a mental illness. And so she's a very sweet woman. She's a very religious woman. But she had trouble distinguishing reality from what was going on in her head. And so that whole struggle and her learning about her relative who had the same name as her, and her, what she got out of that, I got out of that, because I have a mother who has mental illness. So that, I didn't expect that from the book. I think it was like an algorithmically like recommended book based on like what I had just read. So I was like, okay, whatever, I'll read this. But that was delightful. I liked that book.
Yeah, good. If Amanda were here, she loves Gouge. I feel like maybe I read one Gouge when I was younger, but Amanda has just been plowing through the adult series over the last few years, and she says that some of them are really heavy, but they're all really, really good. So
I found with her, like, I read The Deacon's Watch, and now I'm reading Castle on a Hill, I think it's called. I find that the books that I really need to be in, like, a, I don't know, like a private meditation room. I just need the full focus on the book, because like everything has a meaning, and she's trying to lead you somewhere. And it's not like something you can passively kind of listen to as an audiobook. At least that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. I feel like I am to a point in my life where if I'm listening to something worth listening to, I'm not going to not cry while I'm listening to it. And this is becoming really problematic, because I listen to audiobooks when I'm taking my kids to and from dance. Like, that's basically when I take audiobook time. It's because we have this 45-minute drive. And my kids are like, are you crying at a safe driving level or not? That's a very valid question. But I was driving out last weekend. I went up to Michigan and back, and I was marathoning through some the Skyward series novellas, because Inara and I have read the main books together that are really long. Like, we've listened to those audiobooks together, but I was having a hard time prioritizing listening to the novellas over all the other stuff. And right now, Inara and I are going through The Lord of the Rings, and that's 52 hours to get through the three books. And we want to stay there. Like, we want to stay in that world and get through it. We don't want to take a break in between books. And so I was like, Inara, if I listen to the novellas by myself, will you read them? And she was like, yes. And so I was like crying through these, because these are characters that I love and that I haven't seen in a long time. And they're going through hard things, and they're being brave and having courage and leaning on each other and maturing. And I was so happy for them. And they're saying these things that I'm like, I need to go back and find, like highlight these and put them in my commonplace book. They're so good. That's the trouble with audiobooks.
That's what happens to me. Yeah.
I wish audiobooks let you like ding it. Like, if you could just like tap the screen. This is what I want from Audible. I want to be able to tap the screen when it says something that I really like and put a bookmark there so that I can come back later. I don't think that should be too hard for them technology-wise. They should just do this.
Yeah. they can already do it to where it's like it highlights it as the audiobook is reading it. So it makes sense
exactly.
to be able to highlight it. Yeah.
And if they're able to mark it on each device, right? Like, my kids are listening to the same book I am, but it's keeping track of where they're at versus where I'm at. They should be able to do this.
I was listening to the Lord of the Rings trilogy audiobook plus reading it. So if I was if I was in a place where I could read it, I'd be reading it. And then if I was painting, I'd continue with the audiobook. And that the audiobooks are great because you can hear the songs sung. But then I like to highlight stuff too. And so I'll be like listening to this, like, it's beautiful language and or this piece of poetry, and I'd want to highlight it or something. But then I'd have to, but I didn't want to stop what I was doing. So that was, I don't know. It's there's pros and cons.
Yes, definitely. I just accidentally stumbled upon something that has been a unique experience for me, which is that with my, so I have five kids. And so out of my older three that are in dance, the younger two have dance on one night, and then my eldest has dance on another night. And so with my younger two, we've been listening to The Hobbit. And with my eldest, I've been listening to Fellowship of the Ring. And it's been so interesting listening to them parallel with each other and seeing Bilbo and Frodo and how they start their journeys and how they mirror each other versus also how they're very different from each other and how Frodo is able to take from what Bilbo has experienced and shared with him and apply it, and how different it is the group of people that they are with as they're going, how that changes how things are doing. But that's just been very interesting. And I shared that on Facebook, and somebody else said that she was doing basically the same thing, where she was going through one with some of the kids and the other with the other, and how she also had found that very interesting. But I told Eric, my husband's decided that he's going to read through the trilogy, was his thought. But I was like, no, you have to start with The Hobbit. And he's like, but I've read The Hobbit. And I was like, in the last 20 years? And he's like, no. I was like, okay, so you should read The Hobbit, because I want you to see all the ways that their journeys are different. And The Hobbit, in comparison, is a quick read. So he's going to do The Hobbit with himself before bed so that he can have conversations with the kids about it, which I appreciate. Because they're really such good stories. I haven't read them since I was a teenager, and they're just like kicking me in the pants. I don't know if I've shared this on here yet, but I had the hardest time getting through the first few chapters of The Fellowship of the Ring because I knew what was coming, and I knew how hard the journey was going to be. And my journey is kind of hard right now, and I didn't want more hardship. I didn't want that, but I just kept telling myself, there's light and there's hope in their journey, and I can anchor myself to their hope and to their light, and that can remind me that there is hope and there is light. And that's one of the things that I love about books, is that they're all true. They all have reflections of truth in them. And so they're telling us truths, and they can help us so much in our story that we are walking in.
Mm-hmm. The spirit that they're written in is true, even if it's like a fictional story, like
right.
It didn't happen in time. It has deep truth to it.
Yes.
I had a similar experience. I just finished Return of the King, and I remember I was reading when they were going to Mount Doom, and that long trek Sam and Frodo went on, and I was reading that like at work, and I remember coming home being super grumpy and upset, and I told my husband, I'm like, this is really hard to get through, because this is so like hopeless, and like, yeah. I felt like Frodo at that time. I was just like, it was really affecting me. I don't know, like, I just saw this big, long, gray, ashy pathway towards mm-hmm. this volcano, where Frodo is basically saying, we're not going home.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's rough. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. And Sam is sticking with him. And I love Sam so much.
He's the MVP.
Yes. Yes. I don't think I've shared this with Charlessa either. So I'm just going to share this here. So one of the things that I think really got me over my hurdle in fellowship for where I started feeling the hope immediately and being happy mm-hmm. was when Frodo goes to tell his friends that he's leaving and he's going alone and he can't even mm-hmm. get it out. And his friend is like, would it help you if we told you what you wanted to tell us? And he's like, there's no way. There's no way that you know what I'm going to tell you because I'm such a great secret keeper. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what's going to happen. And they tell him like everything that's happened in his life for the last year, everything that he is planning. And they're like, and we're going with you. And the fact that they had set a watch on him for the past period of time, because they were afraid he was going to try to sneak off in the night without them. And they were so, where you go, I will go. And I told Inara and Amanda, I was like, this is the story of Ruth. This is Ruth and Naomi right here. And I think in the Bible, the story goes so fast and we don't see the mm-hmm. build out of it. But I was like, this is that story. This is someone saying, I have weighed this. I have measured it. I know what I am losing. Like, Ruth is going from having had a family that was wealthy enough to give her a dowry to get married to that she could have gone back to. So she could have gone back to this family and possibly gotten married again and had a comfortable life in her home land to, I'm going to go to a new land. I'm going with someone and we're going to be in abject poverty. I'm going to be the person who has to carry all the weight and I will never come home again. And that's what Frodo's friends are saying. Like, they're saying, and they say that they measured it, but clearly they had no idea what they were really getting into. But they said, we know we may never come home. And we also know that it is not right for you to go alone. And so you won't go alone. We are going with you. We have made the preparations. Yeah. Bilbo or Frodo's like, you know, we'll be ready to go in a few days. And they're like, we can go in 6 hours. We just have to pack perishable food. We have everything else ready to go at the drop of a hat because we have prepared for this. And that was just so beautiful. And I was thinking so often in wedding services, you'll hear someone say, where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God will be my God. It's like, that's so little. And then in reality of the true understanding of what that means for your life. And I think that Tolkien just did such a good job at expanding on that story. And again, that's the real stories being reflected in the fiction, but it's a real experience that so many people go through. I think so many men and women in the military have that experience of saying, I've weighed and I've measured and I know I might not come back. And I'm going with you.
Yeah. You do need people. You do need people to confide in and to share the burden with. And you see in Return of the King, there's a few characters, side characters, that aren't able to keep hope in that overwhelming like sense of doom. I think Denethor was one of them. And what was interesting, actually, is Eowyn, I hope I didn't butcher her name, but my husband always corrects me. Eowyn, she's an interesting character, because I remember that in the film, she's just kind of like this cool lady with the sword. I am no man, whatever. But in this one, you see a little bit of darkness in her, or just a little bit of, like, she's got a bit of an edge where she secretly kind of desires power. Like, after all this is over, I want to be the queen of the people, of all, marry Aragorn and be, like, powerful. And so she's sad because things might be ending, but she's also kind of jealous in a weird way. And so she wakes up to that with confiding with Faramir. And I think that made her far more interesting as, like, a strong female character than if she was just sort of like, oh, I want to fight, but you're making me stay home. No, she had a lot of complexities about her.
Yeah.
I think, back to your point, I think, yeah, you do need to share your life with people. I mean, I've had this where I wanted to go do this on my own, or I just, when in my 20s, I was like, I'm never going to get married, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it piles up all the experiences that you would have gone through with a group of people, with a family, it just sort of piles up onto yourself, and you can't ever take that by yourself. So
yeah.
I think that's very, very important. And in the Shire, they may not have understood, like, what was awaiting them, but they understood they needed, like, hope, and they needed each other, and that was, like, enough, like, the whatever, the, I forget the name of the elven bread, but that was enough sustenance.
Yes.
The mana bread. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And we even loved Fatty, who knew his physical limitations, that he couldn't go with them, but he still had been part of the preparations for sending them off. And he was going to run interference, knowing that that still put him in danger in the Shire, trying to buy them extra time. And so I think that,
yeah,
I think we don't want to discount those people in our life either, that
yeah,
may not be with us the way we might want them to be with us, but who are giving everything they have to give in love. And so I really appreciated having both of those in that scene. Being someone who, I'm always telling my husband, I was like, hey, if we ever have to flee to the hills, just leave me behind. Like, I've tried to climb a mountain before with this chronic illness. We know how that ends up. And obviously he's like, no, we're not leaving anyone behind. Everyone's going with. But, like, I feel like Fatty. I was like, I can run interference down here on the mainland. I'll swing my sword around a few times and buy you some time. I'm not delusional thinking that I'm going to be carrying kids on my back over the mountains. But then I have to remind myself, I don't know if you've read many missionary biographies, but there's one by Gladys Allward called The Little Woman, and it's her autobiography. And they had to flee over the mountains with all these kids from the orphanage that they had been taking care of because the war was happening, and they had to get these kids to safety. And so it was basically, if I recall this correctly, her and the teen girls from the orphanage. I don't think there were other adults, maybe one, but I think that person stayed behind. But it's her and all these teen girls who had had their feet bound up until a few years previous. So you have all these girls with tiny feet carrying babies through the mountains. And they rested as often, like, they would cycle through, like, girls would rest their feet and keep going. And I'm just like, like, that is inspiring to me for the whole, you get up and do what you have to do. And I'm going to share my favorite part of that story, which is where they are exhausted. They've gotten over the mountain and now they're at a river and they don't have a way across the river, and they can hear the artillery in the distance close to them, and they know they have to get across the river. And Gladys is just exhausted. She is mentally, emotionally, spiritually spent. And she's just like, I don't know what to do. This is not a creek. Like, this is a river. There's no boats, nothing. And the children are like, well, just pray that God will part it. And she's like, what? And they're like, yeah, God did it for Moses when he parted the Red Sea. Like, he can do it. So you say that he wants to take care of us. So just pray that he will part this water. And she was so touched by their faith And so she starts praying and she's like, you know, God, you're the God who can do anything. Will you please part this water? And they're all just praying together. And all of a sudden they hear a motor coming and they look up and it's a boat and they're very concerned because they do not know if this is the people who will protect them or the people that they're trying to get away from. And this soldier comes up and he's like, what are you doing here? Like, you need to go. There's this battle is like on top of you. And she's like, yeah, no, obviously we would like to, but we are stuck here. And he calls on the radio and all these boats come and they take the kids and Gladys across the river. And one of the little boys, I'm going to try not to cry, but it will fail. I'm already going to tell you this. One of the little boys says to a soldier, we were praying that God would part the water, but he saw how tired we were from walking. And so he sent us boats to take us across instead. And it's just like, what beautiful faith. What beautiful recognition of like God's love and provision. So I just love her biography. It is one of my top three biographies, period. I've read it so many times since I was a kid, but
what was this?
Called Gladys Allward is the missionary's name, and the book is called The Little Woman. She was incredibly petite. So, but yeah, it's just, it's a beautiful book.
So. That reminds me of, if we're talking about the books from the list, Potato Peel Pie Society. I remember there's one part where somebody had a contraband radio. And they were hearing, like, the BBC, and they were saying it's over for Germany. But they couldn't, and everyone around them couldn't let on that they knew that they were going to be free soon. So they had to, like, hold in all of that hope. They knew the secret. They knew it's a happy ending. But they had to pretend, like, that, you know, they were these, they were captives.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in Lord of the Rings. I wish I had the quote, but there's something about, like, the doom is coming from the east, so therefore have hope, right? It's not coming from the west, it's coming from the east. And so like that's really symbolic, the sun rising, Christ. I remember that being like, yeah, when you're in the thick of it, you just have to remember that it comes down to a happy ending, not maybe the way you think about it, think it'll happen or you wished it would happen, but you just have to keep faith.
Yeah.
Well, I think in nonfiction, we see, or in fiction, like those moments where it makes the Bible real, or it makes that just come alive. Yeah, you see it in other people's lives, you see it on something else, and it just, it resonates with you. And anytime we can have a glimmer of hope through whatever we're going through, be it fiction or nonfiction, or just, you know, a scripture or a friend, we need those. We need, you know, the opposite of what, you know, of Ruth was probably Job. He didn't have people that were willing to stand with him, you know, and how many times we feel like we're in a Job situation. And, you know, there's either a book or a friend or something or a light, just a glimmer. That's sometimes what we need, because a light, you know, will bring out the darkness. We just need those glimmers, and that can be found in fiction. It can be found in great storytelling, you know, and autobiographies. Mm-hmm. Yes, you shared that story with my daughter, and she loves Gladys also. So I need to snag that book for her specifically. So,
Yeah, it's so good. And for younger kids, there's another biography on Gladys called These Are My People by Millie Howard. And that's a really good one, too. It just doesn't have – there's some intensity in the autobiography about what was – about the persecution that Christians were experiencing during that war. And that would obviously, if you're doing it as a read aloud, you can edit on the fly and whatnot if you would like to. But if you're just looking for something to hand your kid, that's a biography on her. These Are My People by Millie Howard is where I would go for that.
And I
one.
Think
your daughter, Charlessa, would be fine.
Well, I just think that's the truth. We need to like start to expose them to the, we always say good and beautiful, but we also say the truth, you know, the truth that can be shared. You know, it's not always pretty.
Yeah.
But there's always a redeeming hope. And so when the friends rallied and went with them, like, no, we're going with you, there's hope in that. There's security in that, knowing that you're not about it alone.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, beautiful. Oh, yay.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. So, Kelly, what when you were reading these books, were you finding reflections of yourselves in all of them? acting as a mirror, or were there some books where you just felt like they were a really good window into someone else's experience?
I would say that's fair. I think it's a bit of a mix of both. So yeah, there were some where, yeah, I can totally see myself here, or I see a past version of myself here, but others mm-hmm. it's like, I haven't been here, but now I understand what that's like.
Yeah.
So I think there was this book called The Proper Place. It's one of those books where it's like, oh, it's an interesting kind of wholesome book. It has kind of a sad ending where the heroine and the hero don't get together, and it's something that could happen in anyone's life. And I've never experienced that, but now I kind of understand, like, okay, so what did this person do after that? And their life yeah. went on. So I don't know. I'm happy I read that. I don't think I saw myself in that one, though.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you literally took Amazon suggestions of how you started besides Miss Prince.
Well, for that one,
I'm like, wow, so bold.
I'm not sure. I think.
Or I'm reading the wrong stuff or buying the wrong stuff because I'm not getting good suggestions.
I had just read a biography about my favorite saint, Saint Thomas Becket. And it was, I read like every biography on Thomas Becket. But this one was good because it was recent and it was written more like a novel. It had a narrative. Mm-hmm. And so it was one that I could actually read with my husband and he'd be like, oh, I understand this stuff. I don't need to understand like every date or letter or yeah. piece of theology or something like that. But I understand the story of this guy. And so I was like, maybe I should read fiction. And I was like, can you give me like some religious fiction that's not, I don't know, too saccharine or yeah. like, I'm not sure what I was looking for. And I think I got that. I got that as a possible result from my search. And that's yeah. how I read it. Yeah.
I want to say so. That Amazon does not always fail in its suggestions because... For one, I think they do a really good job with picture book biographies. If you're reading a lot of picture book biographies, they do a good job at letting you know what new ones have been published. But I don't know what I had been buying that made them recommend it to me. But that's how I found the Histories of Earth series and Through the Window Room, which are incredible fantasy they're Christian fantasy in the same way that the Green Ember or Wingfeather Saga are Christian fantasy, as in they are written by Christians, not that mm-hmm. there's any actual theology or religion in the text itself. But the author, Stephen J. Carroll, he's a musician, and you can hear it in his writing. Like, there's just so much good lyrically written text, and it's so funny. Like, so many little jokes, and he does the thing where he talks to the reader, you know, dear reader, this is what was happening, and or if you will recall, we know this, or reader, this is all you need to know about this situation to understand what's happening now. And I really, that can be done so poorly, but he did it so well. And the audiobooks are mwah, chef's kiss. I love readers who have accents and have a slightly odd cadence or pronunciation for words. There were times where the reader would say a word and I would pause it and I would turn to Gemma and I would say, you would know that word as this. And I would pronounce it a different way and she would be like, oh yes, I know that word. But the reader is excellent for them. So we are through the first two books. There's four in the series. And they're just so fun. It's space travel in that they go from Earth to another planet, but the other planet also has humans and like everything is, it's like it's another Earth. So okay. In that way, it's not sci-fi, even though technically it's sci-fi because it's another planet, but really it just reads as fantasy in that they're going from here to there. And when they leave here, they set a clock. And so they just get yanked out of the there when their clock ends up and they come back here, whether they really were ready to go or not. So then it's them trying to time things out, especially perilous things, so that maybe I could do this perilous act and get yoinked back before I actually have to deal with the consequences of my actions. Not like bad consequences. Like maybe I can smack the giant in the back of the head and not have him stomp me because all of a sudden I'm going to blink out of the situation. So that's a really good book. And I love, and Amazon recommended it to me. And I like the generations that are in it. So the first book is two young schoolgirls who have this experience. And then the second book is the grandson and another schoolgirl of one of those women. And now those women are still here because one of them is now the queen of that planet that they had visited because she married the prince from the first book, and her best friend is considered the queen of Earth because that's where she comes from. And so you have this generational wisdom and experience being passed down, and it's highly enjoyable. So I'm very curious where book three is going to go. I don't see how it couldn't still have the boy and the schoolgirl as at the same age they are, because they're kind of, they have found themselves at the end of book two to be stranded on the planet that they are on, except now they have found a new device. That's like how it ends. They found a device that may send them back. So I don't know, it could time jump again and we might have the next generation, but it's highly enjoyable. So Amazon did not fail me then. And so I cannot say any absolutes about Amazon suggestions anymore in the same way that I would have before, when I was always like, why Amazon? Why would you think this is what I wanted? I do not.
So how do you two prioritize your reading then? Because I feel like I come in of, I miss so much. Kelly, do you feel like you came in saying, I miss these stories from when? And so how do you prioritize what you're reading when? Amber too. Amber's always listing books and I'm like, how does she get it all done? So I want to know how you prioritize your reading. Like what you're going to read when.
I think one of the benefits of not having read a whole lot is that everything seems new. Mm-hmm. So where like, if I had this catalog of books that I had already read, I would already in my head kind of have a scale of good and bad. I don't have that now. So I can like read a bad book and I'm not like, I feel something out of it. So I don't really have a plan. Right now it seems like I'm going through like medievalism. So I read the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I'm working my way through Ivanhoe and I plan on reading a modern translation of Canterbury Tales. So that's like my thing. Right now, and then other stuff on top of that, whatever seems like I want. I have tons of books and I'm excited to pick out like 10 at once if I could. So
the short answer to your question, Charlotte, says I do read 10 books at once. So I just rotate through them, and that way I always have something that I'm interested in any mood or level of cotton in the brain just from being tired and whatnot. But Kelly, I want to ask, if that was an exhaustive list from last year, then you haven't read this, but have you read Enchantress from the Stars or heard about it?
I have not.
Okay, so you're talking about going through medieval times. I think that you might really enjoy Enchantress from the Stars. It's science fiction. And I love it because it has civilizations in different levels of development. And so there's the base level of development is medieval times. Like that is what the planet that they are on is. All the people, like if they see scientific advancements, they think it's magic. If they see anything machinery, it's magic. And they're very swayed by the magicians. And so there's actually no magic in the book. And the girl that they think is an enchantress is really from this hyper-developed human society where they've figured out kinesthesia, or what is it, where you can like move objects.
Telekinesis?
Yes, thank you. Like it's not kinesthesiology. Yes, telekinesis. So they figured out telekinesis and they can explain it scientifically. So it's not some like hooby-jooby thing. And so they're the two extremes. And then the middle section would be a planet that has just started having the ability to travel in space. And so what that planet is doing is they are going to other planets that they consider to be lesser than them because they don't realize that there's this even further developed civilization. Mm-hmm. So they're going to these lesser planets and they're colonizing them. And so it's very much like your classic colonization, right? Like this,
yeah.
They're going to put everybody in this little reserve and they don't see them as fully human. But so we're hearing from three characters. We're hearing from one of the male hero character from the medieval time period. We're hearing from the enchantress, the main character of the book, because it's epistolary. So this is the story of her mission and she's writing it to her cousin.
Ah.
So we're hearing from her. And then this middle development colonization group, their doctor, we're hearing from him. And he's basically like, I think they are human. I think that we have misread this situation. I think that we were fed a whole bunch of propaganda. And I think that maybe the right answer is to go against orders when you realize that the orders are bad. But what do I do? So it's really fascinating. It's her first mission. She's there with her dad. She kind of snuck there and wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. And so it's brilliantly told. And it definitely feels like if you had a story set in the Middle Ages and then all of a sudden some time traveler shows up from the future is what it feels like, even though they're all in the same time, just at different levels of development.
Yeah. But
the thought processes of everyone and how she feels bad about what could be construed as manipulation or trying to trick someone into something for their own good and her struggles with that situation. So I think there's just so many good moral discussions that come from it. But if you're reading in that time period of the Middle Ages anyway, it would definitely be a fun one to slip onto the list.
No, that sounds very interesting and sounds very applicable to certain events in our history as well.
Yeah. It's part of a two-book series, but I have not read the second book, and this one completely resolves at the end of itself. And I had a friend that read the second one and she said that she didn't like it as much as the first, but I am not one to take somebody else's word for it. As we said earlier, people read books and have an entirely different experience. So I might really love it. So I hope to read it at some point. But we listened to the audiobook for that one as well. And the reader did a really good job. Being female, I feel like readers sometimes, well, both ways. So I feel like female readers sometimes make all the men sound the same. And I think male readers just make all the women sound high-pitched and whiny. And so finding readers that can like do nuanced voices for the men and the women is really good. So the reader on Audible for Enchantress from the Stars is excellent. Do you have a plan right now or a list of books that you're hoping to read through this year? Or are you just going one book at a time?
I'm trying to follow, like last year, I follow some Facebook groups that have book lists, like plans. And I want to read along, but again, I'm see, it doesn't fit my schedule. I'm just not as fast as everyone else. So I plan to read at least some of those, maybe off pace from them. But I don't really have a clear-cut, precise plan yet. I know what I want to read. If I can get it done this year, it'd be nice. The medieval stuff, I think, it has to do with, it's just something I'm interested in. But also we're going to go to the Renaissance Fair in February and I want to be like in the vibe. So
nice.
So yeah.
Yeah.
that's basically it for now. I'd like to go back and read nonfiction as well. One of the books I read a while back was a translation of the Confessions of St. Augustine. I think it's Balding. But that one is another one where it's like, it's technically a nonfiction. It's a biography. It's an autobiography, but it's translated in a way where it's really novel-like. I don't know if you guys have read Confessions, but like it, at least the first half is basically the story of this man's life. And then the second half is about nature and theology and stuff, and it kind of loses the track, but the first half is just golden. And I'd like to read that again.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I haven't read all of the Confessions. I've read like chunks of them. But yeah, I would like to read it at some point. And that sounds like it would be an accessible way to read it.
Yeah, there's a moment in his life where, like I said, I wasn't reading fiction, but I think throughout my whole life I've been watching TV and playing video games and every other type of fiction other than a novel. And there's a point where he is talking about how he was a young man, he's a go-getter, and he was addicted to going and watching plays. So he put on these plays. He was especially addicted to tragedy. Mm. And he liked feeling bad. He liked how that was making him feel bad. And I can't help but think about, like, reading these books last year has made me like television less, because there's so much overacting and drama and, like, negativity and mm-hmm. just... there's so much like empty negative weight to scenes when there doesn't need to be. And I think it's sort of like turning up the mm-hmm. volume, but not really turning up the substance. And I was like, maybe mm-hmm. I was like Augustine for a while, where I was just addicted to drama and I didn't realize it. There really wasn't anything there. I wasn't really crying about anything. It was just people acting sad. So that one, that's part of the reason made me think about reading that book again.
Yeah. When you read nonfiction, so it sounds like what you've recommended are the nonfictions that read like novels, mm-hmm. but is that what you really like in nonfiction, is the ones that have a more storytelling?
That's a good question.
Way to communicate, or just straight facts and figures?
So the one informs the other, right? So you can know all there is to know about like 12th century England, like all the facts and the figures and who was Lord where at what time, what the harvest was like at a certain year. But that's just a bunch of measurements. That's a spreadsheet, right? So that what are you really right. in it for? You're trying to find a story. Even I can even say that yeah. might be true for like other sciences, where part of your interest in it, whether you realize it or not, is some kind of narrative. So mm-hmm. I was talking about St. Thomas Becket. So his life is very interesting to me. But then as I read these biographies, the other parts of the Middle Ages kind of, I don't know, lighten themselves up, and I get more into like medieval theology or like calligraphy or stuff like that. So I would say maybe if you are a fiction reader and you don't read nonfiction, start with a biography. And the other way around, if you just read like history or just sciences or something like that, start with a biography, start with an extraordinary person that has a life that reads like a novel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. The Julian Messner, the publishing house, Julian Messner, published a whole bunch of biographies called the Messner Shelf of Biographies from like the 40s to the 80s. And they all read like novels. Like they picked mm-hmm. people whose lives were just fascinating. And I always get sucked in. Like I can open one of those books to any page just thinking, oh, I'll read a couple pages. And no, I will not read a couple pages. I will be there until I have to be somewhere else because they're so interesting. And yeah, and a lot of those are available on Internet Archive if people are just looking for interesting biographies to get started on. But yeah, picking interesting people is definitely a way to go. And sometimes people surprise you. Like you didn't even realize they were half as interesting as they mm-hmm. were. That's how I felt when I read Clara Barton's biography. I knew I had read some Clara Barton kids' biographies when I was little because my mom was a nurse and I thought I was going to be a nurse. And so I was reading all the different nurse biographies. But then I read the Messner biography on her. And I believe, wait, who is that by? I just saw it in my head and then it disappeared. Nolan. So I'm pretty sure her biography was by Nolan. And she was involved in so much and such fascinating stuff and more wars. And she was a nurse in Europe. And just, I was completely blown mm-hmm. away by everything that she was involved in. And my father-in-law, who is so patient with me when I just need a sounding board for my biographies that I'm reading, I was like, you know, when did you think that this event happened? And he's like, oh, I thought it happened at this time. And I was like, yeah, me too. Guess what? It didn't. Mm. It happened here. And she's the reason why this is even a thing that America joined in on and all this stuff. So yeah, biographies are definitely a really, really good way to get into nonfiction. Yeah. I agree. So you may have answered this inadvertently in this conversation, but I'm going to ask the question specifically. So what would you say are the three books that have been most influential to you in your life up to this point?
So...
Or three of the books. I know it feels very limiting. Three of the books.
I was about to say that it feels like after I finish a book, that's the most influential book I've ever read. Yeah. So like all of them is the answer. But if mm-hmm. I was going to, like, I could put them chronologically, I would say in relating to my interest in history. When I was a young adult, I had an interest in Russian history. And so the book that I always think about is Notes from Underground by Dostoevsky, which is a bummer of a book. I don't remember much of it. It's not my favorite book, but I remember it was like I was living in a big city. I was living by myself and it was very isolating. And that's the whole vibe of that book. And that's mm-hmm. kind of a stamp on that period of my life. And then I guess so. I talked about medieval history and Thomas Becket. I recommend the book Thomas Becket by John Guy. It reads like a novel. It's very interesting, and that title would encapsulate just my entire interest in the High Middle Ages. All of the books into that one book.
Yeah.
And then the Confessions of St. Augustine, I think, kind of led me down. I don't know. A lot of the stuff I've read, a lot of the spiritual stuff I've done, my going to Mass in the last few years, it's all been St. Augustine. I think it started with him.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us. Well, this has been such a pleasure. And like I said before, we will be sharing the images of all of your beautiful covers on the website in the show notes for people that want to look at those. And I will say you did pull some things out of some books that definitely would have made them like alternative covers, like not something that really would have stood out to me. And I love that look into what stands out to different people. That's one of the reasons I love reading books with my kids, is to have a conversation with them and hear what they think about it. Currently, I'm watching a TV show with my eldest. It's a sitcom from the early 2000s. And I don't like a lot of the sitcoms, they have such inappropriate stuff. But then I remembered, like, I was watching these when I was babysitting for kids and they would go to bed, and I am not ruined as a human being. And they helped me to understand the world around me, even if it wasn't the world I was currently in. So then when I went from my sheltered homeschool, hyper-religious family into society, it wasn't as foreign. And I was desperately watching some of these shows because I started college at 16 and I had no idea what anybody around me was talking about. And that was really isolating. And then I ended up getting my education from them because they could see the blank look on my face of, I don't know what you're talking about. And then they would give me more of an education than I really wanted. So watching these TV shows, while definitely against the family rules, was very beneficial to me in navigating the world around me. So I was like, okay, we're going to watch this show. And I'm doing my best not to like have outbursts of, that's horrible, or why would you do that, or that person is completely to blame. And so last night I did have one of those outbursts. I was like, you know, that's right. And then I paused and I was like, okay, Inara, pretend I did not just say that. What do you read on this situation? And so I tried to just like get her read on it. But it's a form of story, right? And these are stories that, even if they didn't happen to us, have happened to people around us or will happen to people around us. And so it's really good with our kids to be able to have these hard conversations outside of in the moment, because then it gives them a framework of a reference point for what is even happening. I've shared this in the Facebook group a lot, but a lot of times people will say that Jane Austen is best for high school girls and older. One, they make the huge mistake of leaving out the boys. When I was growing up, my male friends could quote Jane Austen better than I could. And I think it's affected who they grew up to be in very good ways. But I think, and my dad loved Jane Austen. He was our entry into Jane Austen. And so I think that a lot of people undersell Jane Austen's interest that people will find in it to just women, teens and older. But I recommend some of Austen, specifically Pride and Prejudice, at a much younger age. My dad passed away 10 years ago, and so Inara was 6 at the time. And so when she was 4 is when she first snuggled up on the couch with Grandpa Bob and watched the BBC version of Pride and Prejudice straight through, because she loved the fact that there was a ball every other scene and that Grandpa Bob was enjoying it so they could enjoy this together. And that, so we started watching the movies a lot in our home, the different ones. And then she and Gemma would listen to the audiobook as their goodnight book, because it doesn't have a ton of action, so it's nice and slow, and it was a story they knew, so they weren't highly invested and wouldn't want to fall asleep. So they would listen to it over and over again. That book ended up being so helpful after my dad passed, when one of my sisters got pregnant without being married, because we were able to talk about Lydia and some of Lydia's choices, and my other sisters had a rapid string of boyfriends for a while, where a different boyfriend was at every holiday. And that would have been incredibly confusing for my children if they did not already know these stories of the sisters in Pride and Prejudice and saw how some of their decisions played out and affected them. And they were able to understand it at their little kid level, which is all they needed, right? They didn't get some of the insinuations and nuance. I was able to expound upon it, but they had a peg for what was happening in their immediate world now, which I didn't know that was going to happen. None of us were expecting that. And then when it did happen, I was so grateful to Pride and Prejudice for being able to have a frame of reference for baseline for starting that conversation. And I think it's such a gentle telling that if your kid doesn't need to understand everything that's happening with Lydia, they probably won't until they're older. Like, you would have to spell it out for them what all of the insinuations and connotations of what Lydia having gone away with Wickham meant. They're not going to go straight there. But if you need them to, then they are like, oh, okay, well, yeah, no, I have seen that happen before. This is not some completely foreign thing to me. So I recommend starting Jane Austen a lot younger, and Emma as well. I think they both have very good relationship situations that your kids will see either in their families or their churches or their neighborhoods or communities that you can say, and they're not all bad, right? Like, even some of the good situations, it's still good to be able to say, oh, look at that. That's very similar to what happened to this person. Like, you know, when her nanny gets married at an older, air quotes, at an older age, you know, be like, oh, this person waited for a long time and now they're getting married and that's great for them. So we've always been very blessed by Jane Austen.
It's like in Northanger Abbey, where she's torn between going and carriage riding with her friends or doing something with the guy that she likes and like doing something more, I don't know, spiritually fulfilling and going on a walk. And it's like, I remember it just, the carriage was like hot rods to me when I was reading it, because the guy that was like, the only thing he could talk about was how awesome his carriage was and how awesome his horse was. Like, this is like going out and driving and causing trouble with your friends. That's what this guy is. So that's applicable to today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I saw something yesterday where some lady was like, if you're trying to tell me how awesome your car is, it better be a truck. Just like, all I want is for you to be driving a food truck, preferably tacos, and then I would be interested in your ride. So yeah, his carriage was definitely not a taco truck.
I would take an espresso machine too.
Well, this was a great conversation.
Kelly, are you still drawing and illustrating?
I am.
These alternate covers? Good.
I plan to. I just read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and I haven't done anything for that yet, but I plan to. I don't know how many books I'm going to read and this year, and I don't know if I'll be able to keep up with the illustrations, but I will try.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a few at a time is great too, just to do a few. So I hope you are continuing. Yay.
Yeah. even just the ones that really stand out to you, where you're like, I think I would have done the cover this way.
I got a text message from somebody after I posted that saying that, like, is it okay if I can use this as a project for my class? So, like, we'll have them draw something based on, like, the book that they read. And I was thinking, okay, yeah, sure. And I was thinking, you know, when I was a kid, if that was the project, if that was the book report, draw a picture about the book, I may have liked it a lot more, you know, so I would be able to express that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of, for me, the beauty of homeschooling is being able to meet my kids at their interest levels and their abilities. So with kids that were autistic and had more trouble with communication in language, Gemma specifically is who I'm thinking about. When she was little, she would, if she got frustrated, her ability to talk would cease. Like, if she was frustrated, she could not formulate thoughts anymore, and she would just stand there and scream. Like, she, if looks could kill, she would just scream in Inara's face if she was frustrated at her. And so she was not really able to narrate, like, the way Charlotte Mason has laid out verbal narration. But if I asked her to go draw a picture about the story, she would draw this. She'd spend like 3 hours on it. You know, this is her, how she wanted to spend her time. She would do this intricate corner to corner picture about what we had read. And then I'd be like, cool, can you tell me about this picture? And then in telling me about the picture, she would narrate the entire reading in a way that she would not have been able to formulate her thoughts until she'd gotten them out through her hands. So we have always loved illustration for narration. And then as they got older, I got the paper where it's blank on the top half and lined on the bottom half. And so it was like they would draw their narration and then they would write out their narration for me and bring it to me. And then for the boys, we do more reenacting. Like, why don't you guys act out something from what we just read? And then that just, it just helps their brain to shake it out in a way where if you just say, tell me about what we read, they just, they're deer in a headlight. Like, oh my goodness. So yeah, I think that the drawing a book cover would be a really fun way for a lot of kids to do a book report on something. And that's exciting. Yeah,
especially if they haven't seen the cover. That opportunity. So they're not like, they don't have an idea what to think about the cover. They're just like, this is what this book meant. And here's the picture. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be really fun to do. I think I'm going to try that with my kids that have just listened to the audiobook of something. So they haven't seen the cover. Because if we're doing a read aloud, then they've all seen the cover. But that would be fun for audiobooks for sure. Well, thank you so much for your time, Kelly. This has been a complete delight hearing about your fiction and nonfiction reads. And I'm so excited that I was able to meet you and see your pictures on Facebook. See, Facebook is connecting the world, guys. Say what you feel about it. Bring so many fun
ain't
people
all bad
together. But thank you
for having me.
Definitely. So all of these books that we talked about today will be in the show notes, and you can see Kelly's pictures in the show notes, and we encourage you to do an illustration of a book cover as well if you are at all inclined. And if you share it anywhere on social media, please feel free to tag us at Reshelving Alexandria, and we will be able to come and see your pictures and love on them with you. And remember, the stories are truer than true.